If you're purchasing a new home or refinancing your existing home, then you need to call Team Hochberg, your trusted local lender, 855-563-2843, or visit 56diva.com. Lower.com, Equal Housing Lender, MLS 112-4061.
Hi, everybody. Welcome to Paul Listening Behind the Curtain, our chance to take a look at fabulous theater that is playing around Chicagoland. And today we're actually going to talk about a show you may have already seen once, twice. I don't know how many times already, because it's one of those shows you keep going back to see. It is Twihard. It's playing through November 1st at the Apollo Theater. And we're going to talk all about it. You can get your tickets at twihardthemusical.com. So I'm going to say that and get that out of the way, because I want to get to the folks who are critical to making this show happen. But Twihard, if you're like, is that kind of like Twilight? Yeah, it's there it is. All those characters you're very familiar with show up now in Twihard. But let's talk about how this all got started. Let me introduce you to Tiffany Keen Schaefer. She is the writer of this show, director. I don't think this exists without you, Tiffany. Fair enough.
Fair enough.
And then again, it might not be as musically inclined if we didn't have our other guest who's with us now, Brian Rasmussen. And Brian, if I'm right, I mean, I know you're a musician anyway and you do this, but this is the first show that you sort of wrote the score for, right?
Yes. So this is my first score of a full show. Like, I'd written plenty of music beforehand, but usually smaller scale works, usually art songs. So like voice and piano or like a string quartet, stuff like that, but never something quite this big and long before.
And so just amazing. And the reviews of it, by the way, I'm sitting reading reviews to you. I hope you see them. Maybe you haven't. People avoid reviews. But but the reviews have been great. I mean, just, you know, just acknowledging just what a great score this is, and having sat through the show, whatever, indeed it is. And you tap into different genres. And yeah, I'm sure this was a challenge, but I'm guessing a very fun challenge.
It was. And I think the show being just as silly as it is gave me a lot of free rein to be like, I remember I sat down for dinner with my composing teacher from grad school, and I asked her, like, hey, do you think this is going to work if I do like this and this and this, and I really switch genres a lot? And she was like, well, if you're describing it as silly and goofy as it is, then I think that works, Brian. And she was right.
And here we are. Yeah. Let's go back to the beginning. Tiffany, how does it all start? Were you reading the books, seeing the movies? What did this?
Yeah, so I am a diehard Twihard, as the director-writer of Twihard the Musical. I started writing it in college, and it started off with the song Sacrifice, which is Bella's I Want song. It's the second song in the show. It's very emotional. It's probably the most grounded song in the whole show, and I was trying to write a parody, and
it has
its moments, but when I started off with Sacrifice, it's definitely about a girl who feels very misplaced in the world and feels like she has to sacrifice the things that she wants for the people around her. And I feel like that was very resonant to me as someone who was just starting college, coming from a small town and then going to Columbia College in the big city, just feeling really lost. And I was like, I'm not funny. So I don't think I can write a parody musical. So I put it on a shelf and it sat there for 10 years. And then I was at Otherworld Theater Company, and it was after one of our improv shows, and I hear one of the improv pianists lament that no one would allow him or give him the chance to write a musical, and that is how I met Brian.
Oh.
And I said, Brian.
And Brian said, I will.
Yeah.
Yeah, pretty much. I said, Brian, I have an idea for a musical. Have you ever seen Twilight? And Brian said, once. And I said, about writing a parody musical based on the movie and the books. And Brian was like, I'll get right on it. And then that's kind of how our friendship, we did not know each other very well even before that. It was a very much like, you know, destiny meet at the bar of other worlds.
It, look, that, this is how people meet, right? Everybody has those stories of that chance meeting, that happenstance, whatever, but it's meant to be. Now, there were four books, five movies, because far be it from Hollywood to try and make an extra buck. Four books, five movies. And so I'm curious, Tiffany, so for you, my understanding is that that the show, and I've seen the show, but it's basically a focus of the first book. True?
True. And movie.
So are, therefore, I have to ask, sequels to come?
Yeah. We hinted at the end, Twi Harder 2, Twi Harder calls, and that would be New Moon and Eclipse. So it would be a mixture of those two movies and books.
And Brian, you're on board?
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
Oh, there's already a Jacob theme. There's already a werewolf theme. And there's a Rosalie theme, and more to come.
Yeah, you're on board. I want to clear up one other thing, Tiffany, with you, because it is called Twi Hard. And so, and I know before I walked in the theater, I'm like, Twilight, Die Hard.
Yeah.
You just said I'm a diehard Twilight fan. But for those people who maybe haven't seen it yet, by the time they see this, they're all going to go see it because they have till November 1st to get over to the Apollo Theater. It's a great theater, by the way. What is this Twilight diehard combo thing?
So that's from Tumblr days. That is what the fan community would call themselves. So if you were a diehard Twilight fan, you would call yourself a Twihard.
Nothing to do with diehard.
No, although you're not wrong, it has confused some people. The first time we did the show, so the show has been running now for almost 2 years.
Yeah.
It started at the Otherworld Theater and then, kind of grew up a little bit and now we're at the Apollo. But when we were at Otherworld, we would always have like the girls that would drag their boyfriends and the boyfriends were like, well, at least Die Hard's here. And I would be like, ooh, yeah. It's not going to be that.
Good marketing though.
Yeah. And then they were like, when's John McClane going to show up? Like I'd get that. People would ask me that at intermission. And I was like, oh, we need to add a joke. We need to add something to the show to like at least give a nod. And so now at the end of Act One, John McClane appears and says, I thought this was Die Hard the musical. And it's just a nod to those people who are ever so confused.
And indeed, there's that parody making you a funny person.
Yeah.
But you must be. Now, I am not a fantasy science fiction kind of guy. A lot of it just goes over my head. And yet Otherworld, which you keep referencing, that is all about fantasy and science fiction. So that is your interest. I assume you're nodding. So, Brian, I'm going to ask you also your interest. Is science fiction and fantasy a thing for both of you?
Oh, yeah. I always say Tiffany's a Twihard for Twilight. My like one thing has always been Star Wars.
Okay.
And now by proxy, also Twilight.
Yeah, but, we work on something for 2 years. It's hard not to be to get induced.
And the good news, Tiffany, even for somebody like me who doesn't, you know, I'm not, like I said, I go to a sci-fi movie like, I don't know, Dune or something like that. And all I want is the special popcorn buckets they make, you know, that you, it just always goes over my head. But this thing was just fun. So it was not a problem that, you know, that typically sci-fi wouldn't be my thing. So I say that for folks who are into that stuff, this is your show. But the point is, if you're not into that stuff, this is still your show because it's just, you just sit back. See, I knew the characters of Twilight. So here I am seeing Bella, I'm seeing Jacob, I'm seeing Edward. And can you, you know, you read anything about this and you're hearing about Team Edward, Team Jacob. Let's talk a little bit for those people who haven't seen the movies or aren't familiar. What is this Team Edward versus Team Jacob rivalry?
Sure. So, you know, Twilight really revolutionized the YA, the young adult novel. When I was growing up and, you know, I'm talking about like 11th grade, you know, Twilight was like kind of the first time we were seeing a book from a female perspective, especially in the first person. And so, you know, it starts off with this teenage girl who is very, very relatable. And it's infused with a lot of teenage drama. One of those teenage dramas being is the love triangle. So, Edward the vampire and Jacob the werewolf, you know, there were t-shirts made. There was conversations because we had not gotten all the books yet, so we did not know. Well, if you actually read the books, you definitely know who she's going to choose. It's always Edward. But the movies really leaned into, is she going to choose Jacob? And really, I think, made a good argument for Jacob. He's shirtless, he's hot, he makes things for her,
That's why there's five movies.
good friends with the dad.
Right, yeah, that's right.
But like it's hard to even look back on and me remembering how much of a cultural phenomenon that was of who was Bella gonna choose between Edward and Jacob. Like you would have full on fighting matches in the cafeteria at your high school, being like, I know she's gonna end up with Edward. This is my evidence. And there's an amazing SNL sketch of Team Edward and Team Jacob, where Taylor Lautner, who plays who played Jacob in the movies, is doing a parody, and he's on Team Edward. And so it's just very funny to see that kind of parallel.
I guess I'm too old for those high school lunchroom prowl. For back in my day, we fought over the Gone with the Wind. Who would Scarlett go with? No, I'm not that old. But I do have one other question related to the movies. Look, I'm gonna go out on a limb and say I think more people are about the movies than the books. I'm sure people have read the books, but the movies are just so classic. And again, who gets cast? When you began to cast this and do all this, did you have Kristen Stewart, Taylor Lautner, Robert Pattinson? Are they in your head as role models, or was like, no, I don't care about them. It's about Edward, Jacob, and Bella.
I was way more interested in the angst. Like, I feel like what really makes you relate to these characters, and at the end of the day, that's what they're looking for. They're looking for relatability.
You mean
The
the
movies
audiences
are
or the characters are?
both. Like,
Yeah.
I feel like that, it's 2008. That grunge, Pacific Northwest feeling. Feeling kind of, desolate, alone, and isolated, and really going into almost that gothic romance. You needed actors that could really embrace that style, and not be scared to go there and not feel, it's an earnestness. It can be silly, but it has to be earnest, and you have to believe it. You can't just have it be surface level. Because then it's like, I don't believe that you're actually in love. I don't believe that you're willing to die for the things that that you believe in. And they say crazy stuff. Like there are some crazy lines in these movies. And yeah, you can throw them away, but we always in rehearsal, we're always leaning into the earnestness of it. And you have to believe it with 100% of your soul, in order to sell it.
By the way, it's a good question. I haven't seen all the movies, so you'll know better than me. And I realize this is primarily the first, but how much, if any, of the dialogue actually will audience members go, I remember that line, I know that line? Or is it like, no, all original, we're not touching that?
We definitely have iconic moments. The worm, you remember the worm moment? That is an iconic, weird thing that happens in the movie. It does not happen in the books. And it's just this one guy comes out and says, Bella, I've got a worm. And, when you're writing a parody, there are two ways you can go about it. You can go, this is so ridiculous, and we're kind of laughing at it. And then there's a like, but we, me and Brian, we always said that this is kind of a celebration. Like, yes, is that ridiculous? Abso-freaking-lutely. Does it come out of nowhere? Abso-freaking-lutely. But, isn't that so cool that we all remember this moment? Even like 15 years later, we watch this, what? Like, we watch these movies like on repeat every year. Like, there is. Fathom Events is re-releasing the Twilight movies in theaters. There's the 20th anniversary of the book is coming out this year.
Yeah,
Like
wow.
these stories resonate. And I think that there's a reason why they resonate. And like
Yeah.
that's kind of what we're celebrating. And yes, we have those really ridiculous moments like, oh, Bella, it's a worm. Where have you been, Loca? That's a big one too. That's even in book. That's not even happened in this It doesn't even happen in this movie. And we say that, but then we say we have to give the fans what they want, and they want us to say that line.
So I'm a fan of Nicholas Ian, for example, who plays a million roles in this show, and
Yeah.
he's so campy and fun and all over the place, and you just like the audience is connecting with the goofiness that you see. Is improv playing any role, A, in your background, B, in what we see on stage?
Yes. The answer is yes. So we've been doing this show now for 2 years, and we gave a lot of freedom to the actors to kind of like make it their own, in a lot of ways. I think that when we were first casting this show, we had built the show to really only run like 4 weeks at Otherworld Theater over Valentine's Day, right? We were not expecting it to blossom into something that was going to run for 2 years. So when we were first casting the show, we had a lot of people in the improv community and musical improvisers audition for us. Otherworld does straight plays, it does musicals, but it also does a lot of improv. So, those are the people that we kind of surrounded ourselves with. And when you're writing a parody, you want the funniest people with you in the room. So a lot of these people I had already known and were my friends. Cosmo, who plays Charlie, is also a big improviser in the city, working at, IO Second City. So it definitely has the heart. Sometimes it goes too far, and they know when it goes too far. They really embrace it, and they make every night different. And I applaud them for that, because we have people who come back, once a week, maybe three, once every 3 weeks. Like, we have people who will see this show multiple times. I think the patron who's seen the show the most, I think, is up to 25 times has seen
Give the
TwiHard.
guy a free ticket already. Well, yeah, let him come back.
We try. We try. We try. They're like, no, I want to support the arts. And we're like, you know what? We can't. We gotta have you. We got we
Yeah,
need people like you.
fantastic.
So yeah.
So, Brian, now I come to you for this music creation because, look, if you were Stephen Schwartz, you could say, "Well, Wicked was easier because with Pippin behind me, you know." But th this was your first, and Godspell. But this being the first show, what? How does it come to you as an overwhelming task? Did it come to you as a welcome challenge? How do you even start this? I mean, if somebody asked me to write a song, not a songwriter, but I could probably maybe write something, I don't know. But you, how do you do this?
Well, I think about something in college. I was talking to my mom on the phone, talking about like something I was really nervous about, whatever. And then my mom says, like, "Brian, stop. If you were going to eat an elephant, how would you do it?" And I'm like, "Mom, what are you talking about?" And then she's
I
like,
know the answer to that.
"Yeah." And I would be like, "One bite at a time." It was interesting because I think I asked like, "Oh, so it'll be like a quick, like little 90-minute one act thing." And then Tiffany's like, "No, like a full scale 2 hour." And I'm like, "Oh, okay." My first thought was like parody musical. Okay, so like a few songs in there. It's not like a crazy undertaking. It's not like I'm not biting off more than I can chew. But I was wary that I'm like I'd never written anything this big before. But then as we went on, it just there was more music, and then there was more music, and then there was more music.
Wait, at who was that? Because Tiffany said we need a song, or that was because you going, "I got another one."
A little bit of both. There was one moment when we were like really close to being done, and then we were in the lobby of Otherworld, and we're like, okay, so we got that down. We got this. Just got to finish this, and this, and then we're going to be good to go for the first rehearsal. And then Tiff goes, "Oh, wait, Brian, we need to have a villain song." And then I think, and I'm like, "What's that song about?" And then I just like, and then I think, a lot of songwriters say like some songs take me a month and some songs take me 5 minutes.
Wow.
And lucky the villain song was a 5 minute one.
Well, apparently Lin-Manuel Miranda in writing Hamilton, it took him it was like 2 years to write like three songs, and Tommy Cale, who directed it, said, "Lin, we're going to be dead by the time you finish this show." So Get going. And by the way, so they get he gave Tommy gave Lynn 6 months and said, get it together, we'll take it from there. How long did it take you to create this score?
About 3 to 4 months.
Because, really?
Yeah. So
you got Lin-Manuel Miranda
beat. My original
beat.
Outline was like, okay, there'll be like 12, 13, 14 songs. And now there's 32.
Just that is amazing. When you now, by the way, when you get a task like write a villain song, does your mind go, I've got to go to minor chords? I mean, what happens in your head to
My mind went to it's gonna be a goofy vaudeville number because okay. That's funny. Because
we wanted the villain to be a tapper. So yeah. Tap dance is in the show.
When we get tap dancing.
And you get a lot of tap dancing, and so because he's a tracker and a tapper. So yeah, I mean, I was like, can you write a vaudevillian song? Like,
So now it turned vaudevillian. That's right. That could be vaudevillian. Yeah.
Yeah. So that was one that came together quick. I think there were a couple that I really labored over was the opening number. Cause it's like 7 minutes. And then Sacrifice, I took my sweet time with. Because there's the middle section, which I sat with those lyrics for like a couple weeks before I found how to lead into the final big chorus.
Do you have moments? I mean, I know it's like when you walk out of a Sondheim show, for example, sometimes you don't know, you can't have anything in your head, or Jerry Mitchell show, or sometimes you walk out and you're singing the final number in Hairspray, or there's a number that sticks with you. When you were writing, did you sort of say, I want to have a number two that sticks in people's heads? Or once again, is that just like not a concern of a songwriter?
So yes and no. As a composer, I think the most important thing is the music effective? Not necessarily catchy, but catchy is usually better. because the way I approach music is I always start with melody, because there's a lot of music that melody is kind of like very secondary, and a lot of it is like, you know, minimalist music is very much about ambiance and atmosphere. Or some music is more rhythmically focused, and I'm really intent on there being a concrete melody and theme, especially for all the characters. So there had to be an Edward theme, there had to be a Bella theme, and there's a theme for the Mullen family. There's a teen angst motif. But I really do subscribe to, I come from a classical background, so something very prominent in opera and also in film music is something called a leitmotif, which is not even a theme, but just a small musical idea that represents a thing or an idea or a character. So I have a teen angst motif and a vampire motif.
And I just want to quickly say that Brian is a musical genius.
You don't have to say quickly.
And I do not say that, like, you know, just to be like, see the show and marvel at Brian's genius. Like, I was looking to write a parody musical, and Brian did not treat the source material like a parody. Like, you could have easily done something very, very simple with this music. And, you know, Brian, like, I think maybe a week after we had our first consultation, was, like, bringing me, like, he says it's a mix of Sondheim and Green Day if they had a baby. And, you know, like, the music is just, it's so well done, and it's so complex. You know, it's not cheesy music. Like, he takes their love story very seriously. And, you know, now I can never go back now. If I write another parody musical, we have to have this level of music for all of them. Because I think the music treats it serious, and then the audience more buys into this melodrama.
It makes me want to ask here, you mentioned the Sondheim Green Day baby. But Brian, I was going to ask you this anyway, who is your inspiration? You talk about you want to start with melody, whatever. So who is it that you looked at or look at and say that's my inspiration for how to do this?
So I think I have a very large kind of strange mix of influences, but I think from the youngest I was, I think things that had the most profound impact on me were when I was a very little kid, it was Beethoven 9, just the melody of the Ode to Joy. I remember being like a little boy at the piano, practicing my piano. I'm like, I don't want to practice piano right now. And
I'm waiting for Sondheim, and he goes, "You know, there's Beethoven." Anyway, sorry, go ahead.
yeah, but and I remember just like 6-year-old, 7-year-old boy, just like in tears at the melody of the Ode to Joy at my piano. That's one of my earliest memories of music truly moving me.
And that says to me, Tiffany, you were taking a risk with this guy, but go
Yeah.
ahead.
And then all the music of Star Wars and Harry Potter. Because I think John Williams is one of the great composers of the century,
Amazing.
but also with his music, it is brilliantly crafted and well written and very complex. But at its core, it all comes back to a theme and a melody that sticks with you. And then a plethora of rock music, particularly like the punk rock, the emo, the alternative scene from like around when I was a teenager, in the early aughts. And
But you're not, I'm not hearing you say any traditional musical theater
oh, but
names.
then there's Sondheim.
Okay.
Of course.
Thing.
I think another piece that had a really profound effect on me was Sweeney Todd, because I really love like dark and edgy music, which I'm sure you hear that in the score. But I think that's a score. I remember being like 17 and just like flipping through the score, and I was just like nerding out over like I would hear this music and I had to like, I need to know what he did. What exactly is this chord that he wrote here? What exactly is going on here? I needed to understand it because it was a music that I'd never heard that amount of brilliance lyrically, melodically, but also in just its very strangeness. And seeing every tiny little way that Sondheim twists these little things to make that musical what it is. And so it just a giant amalgamation of like my rock and roll influences, my classical influences, and then all the musical theater that I love.
And you know,
Also,
we do hear a lot of that come through. So you say that, and it's consistent. So Tiffany, let me just ask you. Obviously, you write the book, he writes the music. Can you just tell us for a moment? I need to let you guys go in just a moment, but the coordination has to be critical. I imagine there's certain book writers and composers get together, and it just doesn't work between them. But so, you know, did you look and sort of say, look, Brian, this is what you need to do? No, that's not working for me. I need this. Is there, how much of the critical factor do you play in his development? I'm going to take this from your perspective.
I honestly feel it's very drama free. Like I wish I could tell you that me and Brian were like, oh, we are button heads,
It makes for a good show. Give me that
and then is
drama.
there a better, I think a better story when there's lots of conflict. I mean, I think that
Just
a
baseline.
deadline, well, I mean, we had a deadline, first of all. Like we're like, the show's happening here,
Oh,
this, you know?
yeah.
So like the show's gonna have to be what it's gonna be. So but you know, I think that we were really aligned, like really. You know, we both wanted it to be Bella's story. We sometimes feel like the male, you know, D Edward, Jacob, you know, they kind of take over the story, but at the heart of it's about a girl who's trying to discover what she wants. Now, whether she makes good choices or bad choices, they're her choices to make. So we were very much like, this is Team Bella story. And then so it was all from her perspective. I mean, Brian would bring me these beautiful ballads and you know, Skin of a Killer. I remember him like bringing me the sheet music. I do not read sheet music, but he was bringing it to me. He's like, isn't this amazing? And I was like, I'm sure it is. You're gonna have to play this for me though.
I get so excited, and I still do this. I'll send her a picture of my sketch, and she's like, cool.
Have no idea what it is, but very
Yeah,
good.
or I'll get voice memos for, and I'll wake up and I'll be like, five voice memos from Brian.
It's a nice way. It's a nice way to wake up. I love it. And by the way, Brian, and this is a tribute to you, because if people want to be, if they haven't seen the show, or if they have seen the show, if people want to be familiar with the music, I mean, I know that you sell merch in the lobby. So aside from fun stuff, there's a CD of the music, but it streams as well, right? People can listen to it.
Yep. So we're streaming the album on Spotify, Apple Music, and I believe it's in the YouTube automatic algorithm as well.
And how many hours a day does it play in your home?
Well, it plays constantly in my brain.
Okay.
But, you know, I remember when we first got the recording, which was, we are very lucky to have it. Because that is not an easy feat to tackle. I remember, I think I listened to it on repeat for like 2 weeks, because it was, you know, it's of course a composer's dream to hear your music in real life and not have to hear it just in your head. But
yeah. And what fun when you have people over and it's playing and they just go, "What's that?" "Oh, a little ditty I wrote."
Oh yeah. I threw a birthday party this year and I just had like a mix of just like party music on, and then my friends were like, "Should we put on the Twihard soundtrack?" And I'm like, "Oh, no."
Exactly. Well, Tiffany and Brian, congratulations. What a fun show. Great show. As I said, you know, I made the point that while I've seen a Twilight movie, I had not read the books. I'd not seen the other movies, but I was just fine going to the show. So for those who don't really have the background, it's okay. You might not get every single line in it, but you'll have probably, friends with you or people that are around you who go, "I'll explain it to you later."
It's a love story. At the end of the day, if you like to watch a love story, that's what it is.
Exactly. With a lot of fun and a lot of, like I said, campy stuff. And it's just great fun. And the Apollo is such a great space to do it in. Because every time there's a show there, it's always a long run, and they can transform, and you have transformed that space to make it work so well. I want to encourage people, you only got till November 1st. By the way, is there, as we talk now, is there a future life for the show that's already scheduled, or we just have to stay on your website and check it out?
No, we are right now gearing up for the future of the show in a tour. So we can share with other cities around the United States and share the love and share the joy and the nostalgia.
I love, well, then you got to go to twihardthemusical.com, because that's probably where you'll learn about all of this. It's also where you can get tickets. Again, only through November 1st. It's at the Apollo Theater. Yes, they have some available pay parking, and there's parking's not that tough in the neighborhood. So it's worth getting over on Lincoln Avenue. So congratulations. I mean, this has been quite the accomplishment, and therefore I can't wait to see what you all do next, because I'm sure something is to follow. Tiffany Keen Schaefer and Brian Rasmussen, thanks for being with me. I appreciate that. I look forward to the next project. And I'll send you some ideas, Brian, so you can mull them over. I have no ideas. Mull them over in your head. But thanks for being with me. And everybody, check out Twihard the Musical. You have until November 1st. Check it out. TwihardTheMusical.com. Thanks, guys, for being with me. And thanks
for
everybody.
Thanks for having us.
Thanks so much. Thanks for watching us here on Paul Listening Behind the Curtain. Bye-bye.